Ask Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off Duration and SuperDeck products May 17th through the 20th. That means 30% off our most popular color family, blue. Psychologists have found it to be soothing and relaxing, which makes it especially great for bedrooms and bathrooms. And of course, get 30% off all of our other colors. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
What up? Welcome back to Round Ball Stew, presented by RotoWorld. I'm Dan Titus, Yahoo Fantasy Basketball Analyst, joined with Raphael Johnson, as usual. But this time, we don't have that much advice for you because the regular season is now over. We are into the offseason, and the NBA playoffs are about to kick off tonight with the play-in tournament, so really exciting stuff. But first off, we got to talk about the late season antics with some of these organizations. We'll talk about the play-in tournament, some seeding implications, and then we'll get into also RotoWorld's recently just released their all-rookie team. So we'll talk about the best rookies of fantasy basketball to close out the show. But first things first, Raph, what the hell are the Dallas Mavericks doing? You trade all these assets for Kyrie Irving, you give away your depth, and then at the finish line, you have the chance to actually, well, I mean, Oklahoma City had to lose a couple of games, but you at least try to make an effort and go for it. They just mailed it in. Luka played like, what, 12 minutes, barely even put in any effort there. Yeah, man. What are your thoughts on the Dallas Mavericks, and where do you go from here?
It was pitiful. It was a clear move to try to protect that lottery pick. Is top 10 protected if it finished their draft? If they're pulled out of the lottery after that, then it goes over to the Knicks. So, you know, to protect their odds for that, that was the main play for it. Luka played the first quarter only because it was they're honoring Slovenia, obviously Slovenian Heritage Night. And you had people fly from Eastern Europe to celebrate Luka for this game. Get to the arena, he's only going to play the first quarter. And it's like, first off, if you're going to do these types of promotions, don't wait until the end of the season to do it, man. Like, because you don't think about that. You really want someone to fly a few thousand miles to watch their favorite player play, and then you pull them like that. I just think a level of decency is kind of required from a franchise in that regard. What upset me even more was that Jaden Hardy was pulled at halftime, and he's a guy that you want to play all the minutes that he can. You know, if you happen to win the game, well, you kind of put yourself in this position to begin with. But it's like, I don't think it helps someone like him at all to get pulled at halftime, essentially saying, we don't want to win this game. Because you're trying to build a culture, as far as I would understand.
Yeah, that culture is certainly going to come into question here. Kyrie Irving's already said he's going to test free agency no matter what they offer him in terms of an extension. They do have the ability to do that with his bird rights. But, yeah, man, I mean, the NBA is investigating Mark Cuban. I mean, you could see it on Mark Cuban's face at the end of the game when they missed that shot. He was just like, yes. Christian Wood's not coming back. They already said that they don't want to bring him back. I don't know. This culture is a mess, and I think this is not a Kyrie thing. This is something that's been kind of building for a while. There's now rumors, you know, Mike Wilbon said it, that he wouldn't be surprised if Luka asked for a trade, if not this offseason, next offseason. I mean, it's just, from a fantasy perspective, like, if you were playing at the end of the season and you had a Luka, a Christian Wood, like, Kyrie Irving, man, like, it's just brutal that, you know, the play-in tournament was created to make the end of the season competitive for those bottom-end teams. And at the one instance that you have to like, oh, let's make it right, Cuban's like, nah, let's just nah. We're gonna protect this pick. We care more about the future. Well, guess what? I don't know. Maybe he actually does need that pick, because I don't know who's gonna want to play in Dallas right now with all this crap going on. Jason Kidd, his job's probably safe, but definitely some questionable coaching decisions towards the end of the season here. I don't know, man. Between them and the Blazers, I'm like, whose situation is worse? So we might as well talk about that, too. At least the Blazers, They told you they were mailing it in like weeks ago. Like they shut down Damian. They shut down Anthony Simons. Jeremy Grant hasn't played for like 3 weeks. At least they gave us like they gave us the indication that they don't care. The problem is like Dame is like, yo, I don't know that I want to re-up another rebuild here for two or three seasons. Mm-hmm. Like I don't have it in me. So if you're the Blazers, what do you do? Where do you go from now? I mean, I think you have I think you could say a star potential player in Shaedon Sharpe. You acquired Matisse Thybulle. At least you got your defensive stopper. Front court is certainly going to be an area they're going to need to address in the offseason and going forward. But, I mean, where do you go from here if you're the Blazers?
Yeah, to be clear, Dallas isn't the only team that tanked. It's just the suddenness of how they did it. It's guys, people.
The manner in which they did it. Yeah.
Yeah. Like as you mentioned with Portland, they let us know weeks in advance that guys weren't going to play. But Jeremy Grant's going to be an unrestricted free agent this summer. I think the albatross for them is that Yusuf Nurkic contract. Like, why they gave him that kind of money guaranteed? Yeah. I mean, I know he and Dame are tight, but that doesn't mean you have to give him all the money. Like, man, come on. I don't even have words for it to make a decision like that.
Just hamstring your franchise with Yusuf Nurkic, yeah. Who hasn't been healthy, has clearly been attacked by numerous, you know, offenses just for his, mm-hmm. I mean, he's pretty much a cone out there. Plays drop coverage, not very helpful in terms of switching on to opposing defenders. I don't know. He's a low end double double guy, but like just definitely not a cornerstone yeah. franchise piece that you want to pay that kind of money when you're trying to appease your superstar player to get other people to Portland. Like, who's like lobbying to play with Yusuf Nurkic? Just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. They've done a good job. Their draft odds are decent. So they should be able to get someone good in this draft class. You've got a really good top end of the draft. I think that this draft class is going to wind up being one of the better ones in recent history, you know, not well beyond Wembanyama, Scoot Henderson, Brandon Miller, those guys. So they should be able to get a talented piece, but, you know, Dame's not getting any younger. Yeah, as he alluded to in his comments, he didn't have another 2 to 3 years. Like, he probably does, but it's like the patience is going to wear thin. So they need to figure out something because they're also paying him a lot of money to kind of figure this thing out too. So.
Yeah, I think, you know, Chris Middleton, I think, would be an interesting player. He's got a player option. Bucks have his bird rights, but he has a player option, so he could opt out to get a little bit more money. It's going to be a big playoff for him. Hopefully his knee holds up so that we can actually see, you know, obviously he's playing for that next bag. So there's quite a few free agents that I think could help, but, like, I don't know, man. What's your early prediction? Does Dame stay in Portland? Like, can they figure out enough? Can they work the cap space enough to get winners around him or trade off some of those younger assets to potentially, you know, bring in some other veterans to help them win? Or is Dame out?
I think he'll be there next season. I don't know what exactly they're going to do, but I think he's got one more year in Portland before they really have to take a look at this and see if it's time to pull the plug, because, you know, his cap number is not going to get any smaller. It's only going to increase these next few years. Jeremy Grant was effective when he was on the floor, but like I said, with the Nurkic contract, that's money that you can't spend elsewhere. And it's not a contract that people are going to rush to acquire either. So I think we're looking at one more year because people kind of fool themselves into saying, well, injuries had a major factor in it. I'd say did, but I don't really see the upside in Portland, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I don't either. It's like kind of like him and Bradley Beal. Like Bradley Beal was complaining. Sorry, Adam. Adam, the producer here. Yeah. Got to hear about the Wizards slander. But like Beal continues – at every exit interview to complain about like the competitiveness of the team and it needs to get better. But it's like, bro, you just continue to hamstring this team with your ridiculous supermax. Like you're not allowing people to really come in here, stay, build a culture that, you know, is a winning culture. So everybody kind of goes there as a rental and then they're out. So we'll see what Kyle Kuzma decides to do. It sounds like they want to re-sign Porzingis. Definitely something they should probably do, but I don't know. We'll see. Like maybe Bradley Beal finally forces his way out of, out of the Wizards situation, similar to what Bradley Beal or similar to what Damian Lillard's kind of going through right now. Want to talk about the Brooklyn Nets for a second, because Cam Thomas had a great game to close out the season, 46 points, one off of his career high of 47. He got 25, did not play his coach's decision this season. So, I don't know. Obviously, this guy's a bucket, and he was a huge, huge waiver wire pickup for a certain portion of the season for fantasy managers. Right when that trade happened, he was getting a ton of minutes, and then he kind of faded out once Jock Vaughn realized that, you know, he had to play more defensive-minded players, and then also acclimating those new acquisitions into the lineup, knowing that they're going to still have a shot at the playoffs. But just want to get your take on whether you think Cam Thomas can actually find a role, sustain a role in this Brooklyn Nets offense and team. Maybe as like a six man. Like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. He seems more explosive to me than like Seth Curry. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like it's time for that. They got to give him a shot.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think he can be a microwave like scorer off the bench. The issue is the defensive end of the floor. Like, he's never been the most defensively inclined player. And like you mentioned, their need to have more defensive type wings, you know, given all the guys that they acquired or added or around the trade deadline, he wasn't in a good spot for minutes. I think we all knew what was going to happen on Sunday the minute they announced that everybody was sitting. So maybe 46 was a bit of a surprise, but you knew he was probably going to go for 30 just because of the circumstances. So, yeah, I think what he does defensively this summer is going to be crucial for him if he wants to get on the floor, because it can't just be about cryptic social media posts, because we can all watch the games and see why you aren't playing.
Yeah. I would love to see him commit to the defensive end in the offseason. Offense was never a question, man, but like, he's got to lock in on defense if he wants to get any minutes. And I think that's one thing that Jock Vaughn has always been pretty vocal about is strapping up on D, and really trying to see how he can earn more minutes there. But yeah, absolutely great performance. But I think he had probably the second best performance of the closing night of the NBA. Kenneth Lofton Jr., no relation to Kenny Lofton, the baseball player, who was a dope baseball player. But he went off for 42 points. And he's coming off like, I mean, he's the G League MVP. And I saw some talk about it, maybe it was on Twitter or something. But like, I do feel like G League MVP should be awarded something, right? Like, two-way contracts happen all the time. But I feel like that's a pretty good award. And like, the competition of the G League is definitely going up. It just kind of amazes me how good of a scorer this guy is, being how burly he is, and like, I don't know, just not a traditional basketball player build.
Yeah.
But I also kind of take it with a grain of salt. Like, yeah, he did go off, but the Grizzlies weren't really playing any of their players. He was going up against essentially bench players and G Leaguers himself. Mm-hmm. So as a G League MVP, shouldn't have been that hard for him, because he already proved that he could do that. But what are your thoughts on him? And I guess he's more of a dynasty hold right now. I think he's showcased enough that's like, hey, yeah, it's worth holding a roster spot for this guy. Yeah. But do you think he could actually crack the lineup or the rotation for the Grizzlies and get some meaningful minutes? Not maybe this season, but going into next season.
I actually think he might in the playoffs, just because of how shorthanded they are in the front court. Steven Adams, unlikely to return with his knee injury. Yeah. Brandon Clark out with the Achilles. Leaves you Jaren Jackson Jr., Xavier Tillman, and Santi Aldama. I don't think Lofton's going to play much, but there may come a game where they have to steal a few minutes because of foul trouble or whatever. So, you know, he got the guaranteed – he got himself a standard contract signed on Saturday, then he goes off on Sunday. I don't think you're going to have him in your DFS lineup, so you play playoff DFS, but – hey, I would not be surprised if he got some rotation minutes at some point, at least in an early series.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see who they wind up facing in the play-in tournament here. They're going to face the 7 seed. So depending on the matchup, maybe it might make sense to get another big in there. Especially if it might be like the Minnesota Timberwolves, assuming Gobert will be back, but we'll talk about that in a minute. I don't know that I have a confidence that he's going to see significant minutes soon, but like, I think it's going to take an injury. But I do think Santi Aldama is interesting because he gives you at least the ability to stretch the floor. Not really a rim protector by any means, but Xavier Tillman's certainly going to be the guy that's going to be holding down their front court along with Jaren Jackson Jr. But it's just been a great story. You know, this guy was really good in college, and I think he was kind of underrated in terms of coming into the draft, had to kind of earn his place. But, I mean, for him to be G League MVP and then ultimately earn a contract and actually be on the playoff roster says a lot about this kid. So, yeah, if you have him in dynasty leagues, I would definitely hold. And as Raph suggested, I probably wouldn't deploy him in DFS just yet. But if there's an injury, I mean, who knows? He might have a chance to actually get some time on the floor. So I did just talk about the Minnesota Timberwolves. Oh, man, we got things to talk about. Those Timberwolves. So for anyone that wasn't paying attention, Rudy Gobert decided him and Kyle Anderson got into it on the bench. He decided to strike Kyle Anderson in the chest with what seemed to be a right hook, kind of didn't really connect, didn't really land. But it was enough to get him sent to the locker room, sent home, and suspended for the first game of the play-in tournament. I guess from a temperature check of the Minnesota Timberwolves, I think probably the bigger story is that Jaden McDaniels broke his hand or his wrist, fractured his wrist, punching a wall the same game. So it's like, is this just all going bad for Minnesota? Do you have any faith of them going into the playoffs right here? Are they going to be the one that's going to be sitting at home watching the playoffs? Like, or can they turn it around? Because they did, after all of that turmoil, they did get the win that they needed to get to secure that seventh spot. But I don't know. Do you have any faith in them? And where does Rudy Gobert go from here?
It was his hand, just to be clear. Broke the third and fourth metacarpals on his right hand. Just another reminder that if you attempt to fight a wall, the wall is going to win.
Losing battle there. Yeah.
But I agree with you. I think the McDaniels absence is far more bigger just because far more important, I should say, because you got to guard LeBron James with someone. And McDaniels is developing one of the best defenders in the NBA, in my opinion. And to not have him out there, you got Taurean Prince, you got Kyle Anderson, but I don't know if you can get enough from those two guys to defend LeBron over the course of maybe 35 to 37 minutes that he's going to play. So I think it's a huge loss. I think they can win that eight seed game, whoever comes out of that one between New Orleans and Oklahoma City. But no Jaden McDaniels. I think even if they do make the playoffs, it's going to be a short stay. Gobert's absence, I think it's going to help them spacing-wise. You lose a little bit of rim protection, obviously, but the offensive spacing has just been really clunky between he and Karl Anthony Towns. So I think that may actually help them for tonight, but then he's going to be back. So, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I have a similar sentiment as well. Like, I think in the short term versus the Lakers, Anthony Davis is going to absolutely torch Karl Anthony Towns. And so that probably would have helped with that rim protection. But not having Jaden McDaniels on the floor, that's a win gift for the Lakers there, especially when you got LeBron James. So, yeah, I think I think it will help them, though, because I think Gobert probably, if he got into foul trouble, which ultimately could have happened, or if they just need to go smaller because, you know, the Lakers don't have the most imposing front court either. Yeah. I think it will help them pick up their pace having Gobert off the floor. Kyle Anderson is definitely a unique forward that can guard, can play either position. And then when you have Karl Anthony Towns and Gobert on the floor, like, I mean, they were 34 and 36 with Gobert in the lineup this year. So, like, it wasn't like he was giving them this whole nother layer of, you know, confidence and production. I don't think that they figured it out yet. So I think going to the other way of playing more dynamic, having more spacing, getting up and down the floor, I think will bode well against the Lakers. Going forward, it's going to be a rough go because they're going to need losing Jaden McDaniels on that wing there is going to be crucial for their wing defense. But this should be a good game, though. I'm excited for it. Obviously, there's the drama and the turmoil behind it, but I think that the Minnesota Timberwolves can rally behind this. Like, I think everyone's kind of counting them out with all the stuff that's going on. So we'll see. I took the Timberwolves 8.5, actually. So hopefully this supports my bankroll. But I could also see the Lakers just obviously steamrolling them, too. So other injury news. I don't expect there's going to be too much stuff coming out of the injury report ahead of the play-in tournament. But just in case, make sure you download the Roto World app to receive breaking player news all season long. Stay ahead of the competition by favoriting players on your roster. Get the latest injury updates, player news, and much more delivered right to your phone. It's available in your app store today.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic, because we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Let's say your small business has a problem. Like maybe one of your doggy daycare customers had an accident. You might say something like,
doggone it!
Hi, Chihuahua!
Holy schnauzers!
But if you need someone who can actually help, just say,
like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
And get help filing a claim from your local State Farm agent. For your small business insurance needs, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Speaking of injuries, the Lakers don't really have many injuries here, so they're going to be pretty much fully staffed against the Minnesota Timberwolves. What's your read on this game? How do you think it's going to pan out?
I think the Lakers end up winning because the Anthony Davis factor. I don't think Minnesota really has anyone who can guard him. With Gobert out, and Austin Reeves has played really well recently, so that's another thing to keep an eye on. Also, D'Angelo Russell being healthy, he's listed as probable, but he's going to be out there. I think the less you have Dennis Schroeder on the court, the better if you're the Lakers. So, I think they're going to be fine there. I don't know about like 8.5 points you said this spread was, if that's still the case, but I think it'll be a reasonably close game. I just think the Lakers are going to have too much, kind of take care of business at home. And a Lakers-Grizzlies series would be interesting, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. That would definitely be I would love to see that matchup, because I think that the Grizzlies, they definitely have something to prove here. But matchup-wise, I would love to see Jaren Jackson Jr. and Anthony Davis go at it. Obviously, there's a John Morant factor and Desmond Bane. I think that would be a real test to see how good Jaren Jackson Jr. is and whether that defensive player of the year potential can actually hold up against a force like AD in playoff mode. I'm really curious to see how this kind of the Grizzlies kind of translate, because I know they definitely scored a lot in transition. Things tend to tighten up in the playoffs, strap your defense. So I'm curious to see if their half court offense can finally put together something of substance, because that's definitely where they struggled last year in the playoffs and in years past. The other play-in tournament, the Hawks face the Miami Heat tonight. Injury report looks pretty good for the Hawks side of things. Kyle Lowry is questionable for the Miami Heat. Are you expecting him to give it a go? It's playoff time, so I'm assuming he's gonna play. But honestly, did the Heat even want him to play?
I think he'll be in the same role they've had him in the last few weeks, coming off the bench. Probably play, 20 to 23 minutes. They really haven't gotten too much out of that point guard position between him and Gabe Vincent. So it's really going to come down to whether or not Jimmy Butler can kind of control the game when he's that primary playmaker. So you've got Bam, you've got Tyler Hero. I think those guys will be fine. Can someone step up and hit some jumpers? Max Strus has been off and on. Duncan Robinson largely been out of the rotation. So if one of those guys can step up, I think the Heat have a good chance to take care of business at home. But I don't know, man. The more I think about DeJounte Murray and his addition to that Hawks lineup, this kind of game may be why they brought him in, because Trae Young really struggled in that Miami series last year in terms of making plays. He had the one game they won, but I don't know. DeJounte's got the size, the athleticism, the strength, and also is an elite defender. So this might be a DeJounte Murray kind of game, if anything, for Atlanta.
Yeah, Atlanta, I think – also an underrated signing, I think, was Sadiq Bey. He's provided that open that open floor shooting that they needed. That they, I mean, Bogdan Bogdanovic was, he's been solid at it, but he's also been a bit streaky. So I think getting Sadiq Bey there will definitely help. Yeah, this is a tough read for me because, like, I feel like the Heat regular season tend to cruise. And once it's playoff mode for Jimmy Butler, it's like a different animal and beast. Same with Bam Adebayo. Like, I think these guys just tend to show up. The Hawks, on the other hand, like, I agree with you. Like, I think they were missing that other dynamic. Someone else that can step up with the ball in their hands, but also create and playmake. And then now you have DeJounte Murray there. I think Trae Young might struggle. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if we see Jimmy Butler on him quite a bit. Just to kind of slow him up and slow up that pace of the Hawks offense. But then there's your X factor in DeJounte Murray that gives them another creator that can actually, you know, put points on the board and get others involved. John Collins has been playing better as the season's worn on too. So I'm curious to see how he kind of, you know, plays into this element as well. But like, I just don't think that Miami has enough scoring outside of their starters to really make this a competitive game. But we'll see, you know, if Jimmy can go 40 plus minutes, Bam go 40 plus minutes, maybe that's enough to disrupt the Hawks offense. But the Hawks definitely have some depth now. Okongwu is going to give them solid minutes off the bench. Going to be another good game, man. I think that these are both two solid opening games to have in the play-in tournament. I'm definitely going to be watching, tuned in, way more tuned in than I was to the Masters, for sure. my favorite time of the year is the NBA playoffs, so I'm glad we're actually getting to it. So let's pivot a little bit. Let's talk about rookies. This was a tough year for rookies. Walker Kessler was the highest ranked rookie this year, followed by Jalen Williams. And then it was a significant drop off. The tiers of quality rookies this year was pretty significant. And so I'm curious, RotoWorld just dropped their all rookie team. So tell the listeners out there where you landed on the top five rookies of this season.
Yeah, for me, it was pretty – three of the choices were pretty simple. Walker Kessler, Jalen Williams, and Keegan Murray, who is – I guess you'd call him more of a specialist just because of the three-point production. Became the first rookie in NBA history to make over 200 in the season. Those three guys were locks for me from a fantasy standpoint. After that, a little shaky. We didn't have, like, specific position requirements. So okay. – Kind of at our own devices. I decided to stick with him, and the point guard position just really did not provide much from a fantasy standpoint this season. I went with Andrew Nembhard, which is an eye-opening pick, I admit, because, you know, he was in a starting lineup from early November on. I thought he gave him good value in that combo guard role next to Tyrese Halliburton. Had some good moments when Halliburton was out towards the end of the season too. So I went with him over Jaden Ivey. I can see an argument for him if you want to stick to positions. And then my fifth player ended up being Jalen Duren. So I went with a Detroit Piston, just not the one that people expected, may have expected, I should say. 8.9 rebounds per game, led all rookies in that category. He was someone that the Pistons thought would be in a G League for much of the season. That proved to be flat out wrong. His prospects for next year, I don't really know, just because they're going to have a new head coach. They've got a bit of a logjam in the front court between Isaiah Stewart, James Wiseman, and Marvin Bagley. But I thought he had a promising rookie season. So that was my five right there.
I like that five. I think that was a good call putting in Nembhard. As I'm thinking back through this season, I feel like Nembhard was a guy that was picked up and dropped pretty often, but I think he offered those different glimpses of opportunities because of whether it be Tyrese Halliburton missing time with his ankle injury, or just down the stretch as, you know, the Pacers mailed it in like the Blazers and everybody else. He actually was getting double doubles. Like, he's had a little spike in assists there. He always had the scoring ability and the 3-point shooting. But having that other element of actually becoming a distributor when McConnell was also out, I think it was a huge advantage to Nembhard. And, you know, Nembhard, you know, probably less rostered than Ben Mathurin, but I think he offered more cross-categorical value than Ben Mathurin, who was primarily just a scorer, right? Mm-hmm. So Ben Mathurin's a guy that, like, initially I thought that he was going to be one of the best rookies this season. Definitely wanted to see more in terms of rebounding, steals. Great at getting to the line. I think that that's a very positive sign for his development, that he can score in a bunch of different ways. we'll see how the roster kind of shakes out, but I could definitely see him being a starter in this league going forward and could offer some fantasy value going forward. But like, I think Andrew Nembhard is definitely a player that's going to get more time and certainly proved as a rookie. He should make one of the all rookie teams for sure. Jalen Duren, no disagreement at all. Kind of similar to Nembhard. I think he was probably more rostered towards the end of the season or throughout the season, I should say, because the Detroit front court was just so problematic between injuries and benchings and Dwayne Casey just causing havoc. But I think it was really good to see Jalen Duren become that double-double threat. Like, he's going to be a great rebounder in this league. I would like to see a spike in rebound and blocks, excuse me. But I think the steals are there. We talked about a couple weeks ago, Paul George was saying like how big of a force this guy is at only 19 compared him to that of Dwight Howard. I mean, that's pretty esteemed territory and quite an acknowledgement of the upside of this kid. So I would definitely slot in Duren there. I think I would probably replace Nembhard with Banchero. And while Banchero isn't a good fantasy player in terms like of ranking, he was 211. I like what he does in the major categories. 20 points per game, led all rookies, 7 rebounds, almost 4 dimes. He even got almost a steal and a block, you know, 1.3 stocks. Going into next year, I'm definitely going to be ranking Paolo way higher than what his ranking suggests. His real struggle was really just the field goal percentage, the lack of three-pointers. I mean, there's that one time throughout the season he was like 1 for 31 for the month of February to March or something like that. So if he can start hitting threes, which I think is something that he can certainly correct super young, get a little bit more efficient, get that 43% field goal up to, say, 46, cut down on a couple turnovers, you have a pretty good fantasy player there. So it's really about efficiency for Paolo, but, you know, I think the sky's the limit for that kid. He's going to be rookie of the year this year. I think an argument certainly could be made for Walker Kessler and Jalen Williams, but most voters, I think, are just looking at the box score. They see 20 points. They're like, okay, give it to Paolo, but you're talking about impact, man. Jalen Williams certainly probably had the most impact, I think, of any rookie this year with the Oklahoma City making the play-in tournament. I mean, everyone thought that they were going to be one of the worst teams in the league. And, you know, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander certainly gets some respect on that too. But Jalen Williams is probably second to him and Giddey. Yeah, I'm trying to think of everyone else that you mentioned. I think the main three that you mentioned of Walker Kessler, Jalen, and Keegan Murray make a lot of sense. Keegan Murray, I thought he was going to be a little bit better too, but I think he was kind of stifled by Harrison Barnes being there. We'll see now that Harrison Barnes is going to be a free agent. We'll see if he can get more time for Sacramento, but I think he's going to slot in really well. He wasn't asked to do a lot, but the ability to be able to knock down, catch and shoot, and hit threes at a high rate, I think there's going to be a really good future ahead for Keegan Murray as well. Was there any other rookies that kind of piqued your interest this year, or somebody that you're expecting to be a little bit better? You mentioned Jaden Ivey before. Curious to see what he's going to look like with Cade Cunningham coming back next year. And who knows what the draft might unfold. But I think there's definitely going to be more of an opportunity for him to be a little bit more efficient doing less with someone like Cade demanding the ball for much of the offense.
Yeah, I think a lot of the guys that we think about as the top rookies didn't really translate fantasy-wise. You know, Banchero, Mathurin, Ivey, Jabari Smith, he got off to a brutally slow start, but then picked it up late. He's someone to keep an eye on, but they've also got a head coaching change to deal with. Noah Rubin had Mark Williams as one of his selections, and I thought that was an interesting choice because he was in the G League for most of the first half of the season. Then they finally traded Mason Plumlee. Those minutes freed up. There are some frustrating moments in terms of who is actually going to play on any given night, but Mark Williams gave them good run. I think between he and Nick Richards, they've got two interesting pieces to build with in that front court in Charlotte. So I think Mark Williams is someone that his play late in the season, it wasn't enough to put him on my all-rookie team, but I can see an argument for him.
Yeah, he definitely had his moments, I would say, similar to Nembhard and others. You know, we picked him up for a time. Certainly the end of, you know, if you were playing in weeks 22 and 23, it was really frustrating having Mark Williams because of Steve Clifford's decision to just bench him outright, give Nick Richards and Thor some run. So, but I think going into next season, you got to feel pretty good. We'll see how the Charlotte Hornets decide to do in what they decide to do in the draft. But, Yeah, I think having Mark Williams with LaMelo Ball, we didn't really get to see that too much this season. I think that that would be a really exciting duo, potential rim runner, because he's a really good finisher at the rim. So you get someone throwing you some lobs, get you some easy buckets, I think that could be a really nice thing to see going into next season. Could be a cheap big, you know, for rebounds and blocks late in drafts. Trying to think of anybody else. Yeah, Jabari Smith Jr. was interesting to me because super frustrating for much of the season, and then he turns it up right when you probably had already moved on from him. But I think we did see some progress in his game and actually just making shots, right? He's going to be a guy that can stretch the floor. He was getting to his spots more towards the end of the season. So, yeah, that coaching change, I think, there's a lot of talent in Houston, man, and I don't know if James Harden's really going to ruffle feathers here and disrupt the whole thing and go join a youth movement, but Jalen Green improved at the end of the season. Operation Shingun had certainly had several moments throughout the season. Let's see how all this young core kind of unfolds here, but you would expect with a good head coach, man, I think they should all be fancy viable if assuming Jabari Smith Jr. can actually hold on to his shot. Tari Eason, I think, was a guy that I certainly had on my draft boards circled, you know, as a late round steal. Didn't really get much time. I would love to see him get more time at the three, at the small forward spot, you know, perhaps stagger some minutes with KJ Martin. Now that Eric Gordon's out of there, maybe he can slot in at the four when Jabari Smith is playing the five with Shingun on the bench. I think that's the person that I'm looking forward to the most next season and what this head coaching change does, because I think he has probably the best fantasy profile out of many of the names that we mentioned outside of, you know, Paolo long-term, Keegan Murray, Jalen Williams, and Walker Kessler. I would love to slot in Tari Eason as that fifth guy, but I just don't know that he's going to get the opportunity to do so.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
All right, so baseball season's underway. Every season is draft season, but football is also right around the corner, so make sure you get your Roto-World Draft Guide bundle today and dominate your football, baseball, and basketball drafts packed with profiles, rankings, projections. Order today and get all three Roto-World Draft Guides for the price of two. Plus, use promo code BERRY, that is B-E-R-R-Y, and save an extra 20% at checkout. All right. You mentioned it at the beginning of before we started talking about the rookies, but like just the lack of true point guards in this draft class. What do you think came of that? Like, was it just a light draft, or the ones that we thought would emerge kind of didn't? Killian Hayes kind of weirdly played well for a certain portion of time. Yeah. And maybe that kind of cut into Jaden Ivey's potential as a point guard, but is there any other point guards outside? I mean, I think you consider Nembhard a point guard, right? But outside of those two, it's like there's not really many others that kind of stuck out.
Yeah, there really wasn't much value to be had, to be honest with you. And then, you know, you look at this upcoming draft class, really isn't much there either. If you want to consider Scoot Henderson to be a point guard, he's 6'2", an explosive, more of a combo guy. Besides him, I don't really know if there's anyone else right now, to be honest with you. You know, you look at the various big boards, and you really don't have anyone. Maybe a Kobe Bufkin out of Michigan. I think he's kind of a scoring guard. Marcus Sasser out of Houston, not really a big guy as well in terms of, you know, point guard play. So it's going to be interesting, where I think from a fantasy standpoint, we're going to once again be relying on veterans. Which is expected. That's probably the toughest position in the NBA in terms of the talent there and then running a team. But I don't know, man. It's going to make for some interesting decisions. You kind of hope that if you're playing Yahoo or whatever league, they'd be a little bit more liberal with the position designations, because you might need that for some of these younger guys.
Yeah, you know, I was talking about with the product team at Yahoo, and part of me is almost thinking like maybe we just do less. Like, I'm almost thinking it should just be guard, forward, center, and then just have a combination of building out your roster between that. Because at this point, like Shaedon Sharpe, for example, another great rookie that we didn't mention, at least towards the end of the season, definitely showed out and was a league winner for a lot of teams. But he has shooting guard, small forward, and power forward. You might even have point guard in there too. But some of these guys would, you know, LeBron James plays so many different positions. Like at some point, it's like, all right, all these guys are pretty much ubiquitous in terms of like where you can put them. Like they can play everything. So why not just scale it back. Just call him, hey, he's a guard, he's a forward, he's a center, or give them, you know, guard, forward, center, whatever. But yeah, you know, I think that the point guard position, as I think you pegged it right. Like, it's a very difficult position to play and earn minutes to be the facilitator of an offense. And, you know, I think we should probably steer away from just giving people straight up point guard eligibility, because, as you said, Scoot Henderson kind of has a mold of like a Russell Westbrook, Derrick Rose type, where he might be able to average 5 assists a game, but he's actually more of a combo guard just due to his explosion and the way he's a score first guard. These pass first point guards don't really, they don't really make that much of an impact in fantasy, at least until a few years down the line. So we'll see what comes of it. But yeah, I think it's just going to be a light. This year was light on rookies, rookie point guards. Next year is probably going to be anyway. I never usually prioritize rookies in general. This year is certainly going to be a difference. I don't know if we've talked about it yet, but where are you drafting Victor next year? Like, how aggressive are you going to get with him?
Oh, man. I tend to go middle rounds with rookies just because you never really know. I may go a little earlier with him. I don't think I would go earlier than, say, like the 5th or 6th round, personally. But
he's probably going to be gone by then, I would assume.
Then I just won't have him. You know, I'm okay with that. He'll probably be gone, but completely different situations. But I thought people were pretty aggressive with Zion Williamson this year. Completely different situations with the medical histories. I don't necessarily buy into the idea that if you're skinny, you're predisposed to getting injured more often. I don't really buy into that. I think there are ways to work around that. I think if anything, I might be more aggressive with, say, a Chet Holmgren than Victor Wembanyama going into next year.
Yeah. I mean, they're kind of a similar skill set, right? I mean, I've never seen Chet shoot a three and then dunk it off of one bounce, but like still, like their frame and like their skill set is pretty similar. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm trying to think of it like, I definitely fell into the Zion trap this year, but he was really good per game value. He just doesn't play. Mm-hmm. Which sucks for the Pelicans because he may not be ready even for the playoffs, it seems like. Man, they got that dude just bubble wrapped right now. But I'm trying to think of like any – like who was the most aggressive rookie that you drafted this year? Who did you have the most exposure of? Because I didn't spend a early pick on any rookie. I think the one person that I did draft late was Mathurin. I did get a couple of Keegan Murrays. But those were like, you know, I'm drafting in the 90s, the 100s, you know, 10th round, 12th round type guys. Like nowhere near – you know, 5th, 6th round value or anything like that.
Yeah, I went Jabari Smith in 7th round. That did not work out too well. the slow start, I didn't give up on him, but I was really close. We had the early round tables, like, don't give up on him yet because that's going to be a bad team and he's going to play a lot. So he eventually came good for some people later in the season, but I don't know, man.
Too little, too late.
Agreed. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think we have one comment in the chat.
Yes, we do. Steven.
All right.
Won both of your leagues. Nice.
Nice, man. Good job.
Well done, champ. Thanks for tuning in. And all the listeners who are listening on the podcast or watching live, greatly appreciate it. Interesting season, to say the least. But if we could do a little bit to help you out in any way, I'm glad we could do it. And again, just thankful for all you tuning in.
Yeah, for sure, man. And continue to tap in with us. We have the play-in tournament to talk about. The playoffs are going to be starting by next time we talk. It's an exciting time for hoops, and we're going to continue to bring you the off-season content. Today was all rookies. You know, we're going to get into some disappointments. We're going to talk about each position, give you all kinds of breakdowns as we're heading into the draft and into free agency. So make sure you continue to tap into the Round Ball Stew podcast. Thanks again. And hopefully you guys were able to secure your titles like Steven. And we'll talk to you next week. Same time, same place, Wednesday, 1:30 Eastern time. All right. See you next time. Peace.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory-smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.